This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, with such a busy week that we've been having with all things going on, we haven't really managed to talk much about Israeli sport, and there has been a lot of Israeli sport going on this week. There was, there has been the Eurobasket tournament. The Israeli team were participating in the Eurobasket tournament, which is the European Basketball League, and in fact had some quite good successes in beating both Belgium and France in the qualifying stages, in the group stage, in spite of both countries' governments making very negative statements about Israel immediately before each game. And then Israel went on to beat their team, which was somewhat ironic. However, in the end, Israel was knocked out in the group of 16 by Greece, who played a very good game and were worthy winners of that game. The Israeli team, I think, acquitted themselves extremely well. And of course, there are some quite well-known Israeli basketball players, those who are playing in the NBA. It was an interesting tournament, and people felt somewhat vindicated by Israel's successes, especially against Belgium and France. Also, the Israeli soccer team, the football team, has been in action this week. They played Italy in the qualifiers of the World Cup, and it was quite something to see that towards the end of the game, the score was 4-4 between Israel and Italy, with finally Italy managing to score a fifth goal and win, with 9 goals being scored across the game. However, the Italian coach made a comment just before the game to say that Italy was unfortunate to play against Israel. And of course, everybody interpreted that to be something of a political statement that expressed his lack of desire to be playing Israel under the current circumstances. But then he tried to kind of extricate himself from the hole that he had dug himself to say, well, he said it was unfortunate for Italy to be playing against Israel because Israel has a very good team, and because Israel can really cause Italy some problems. Now, it is true that the Italian team is not the same one that we remember of the 1990s when they won World Cups and things like that, but Italy has a very strong soccer history, a footballing history, and they are certainly not quite in the same league as Israel. So I think, once again, Israel acquitted itself quite well, and to come out and be very, very close to a draw with 9 goals ultimately having been scored across the game was quite something. So a little bit of sideshow, let's say, because, of course, the main stories are not around sport at all this week.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the stories. The one that I actually wanted to cover was about this Russian-Israeli hostage that she arrived home to Israel yesterday after 903 days in captivity. What was the story here? What events surrounded her, capture and release?
Well, so this is Elizabeth Turkov. She is someone who originated from Russia and made Israel her home, was an immigrant to Israel some years ago. And she is still a doctoral student at Princeton University in the US. And also somebody who's quite well known as a human rights activist, someone who has been quite outspoken on human rights issues. And as part of her studies at Princeton, she went to Iraq to undertake some research in Iraq. And as we understand things, she entered Iraq on her Russian passport, because an Israeli passport wouldn't be very helpful trying to get into Iraq. So she officially entered Iraq under her Russian nationality, and her then she disappeared, and she wasn't reported originally to have been kidnapped. She was just said as being having been disappeared, and it was all relatively quiet about the fact that she disappeared, and then ultimately some notification that she'd been kidnapped. And we understand that she was held by an Iran-backed group in Iraq called Kataib Hezbollah. Now, it's all very, very confusing because the whole Iraqi-Iranian relationship is not that obvious, and the fact that there's an Iran-backed group in Iraq is also a little strange. But that's the way that we understand things. And we understand that she was really being held as a kind of pawn against the U.S. administration rather than anything against Israel or indeed against Russia. Having said that, 903 days in captivity is really serious. And we understand that she had been tortured during some of that time. It's not exactly clear how well she was looked after during the time that she was in captivity, but things obviously weren't too good. Ultimately, it was a U.S. negotiator who managed to secure her release. And this is really all U.S.-related things. So Israel was not involved at all, at least not up front, in any of the negotiations for her release. Israel didn't seem to be part of the equation at all, and nor Russia, because one would have thought that her Russian nationality may have assisted, if anything. But this was ultimately a deal that was done by the American negotiator, Adam Buller, who was in Iraq and managed to somehow give certain undertakings on behalf of the U.S. government in return for her release, which was secured the day before yesterday. We understand that she was flown via Cyprus and directly back home to Israel, where she was immediately taken to a hospital in central Israel, where she's her health is being checked into, and she's come under the auspices of the organization, the government organization that takes care of Israeli hostages. And unfortunately, that's a government agency that's been extremely busy. And so she falls under those auspices. By all accounts, she seems to be in relatively good health. She seems to be able to walk on her own, and she seems to have been fed to a certain degree. She didn't seem emaciated in any manner, and so she seems ultimately in good health, and I think that there's still a lot more to be understood about the reasons behind her kidnapping, what indeed went on during her time in captivity. So I think that there is still a lot of a story to be told here, a very fascinating story. And of course, we are all delighted that she is finally home and away from the horrors of having been held as a hostage.
What a crazy thing, but at least she is home. Let's talk about Doha, because with the whole Charlie Kirk story yesterday, that kind of disappeared for a short while. Speculation persists as to how successful the attack by the Israeli Air Force was on Tuesday. Anthony, what do we actually know?
Not a lot is the real answer. We really don't know very much, and all of what I'm going to say now and what we're discussing is merely speculation, because there's no hard evidence that we can say we know for sure. I mean, what we do know is that that Hamas has come out to say 5 people were killed. We spoke about that yesterday, and their position hasn't changed from that. But now there is more and more speculation coming out of the Israeli security establishment that Israel was not successful in managing to hit the meeting of Hamas leaders, who we understand had gathered together in order to discuss the American hostage release deal. The deal to release hostages and to potentially bring an end to the war. And from what I gather, Israeli intelligence had tapped into the fact that the senior leadership in Doha, in Qatar, were meeting in one location in order to discuss the American deal. And that was the meeting that was targeted by the Israeli Air Force. Now, one of the stories that I saw said that the Hamas leaders had left their phones in the room where the meeting was taking place and had gone elsewhere to pray when the attack took place. Now, that to me sounds very orchestrated. I wouldn't know why anybody would want to leave their phone in one location and then go to another location unless there was some logic behind why they were doing that. We do know that phones are used to track people's locations. And so if you are leaving your phone somewhere with deliberately, it means you might wish people to think that you are somewhere where you are not. And so it leads me to wonder whether the Hamas leaders might not have been tipped off by Qatar before the attack took place, and that they deliberately left their phone somewhere to try and throw Israel off the track, and then they'd gone somewhere else. It does make me also wonder why they'd left their sons and bodyguards and members of their bureau in that room with the phones when they knew that that was going to be the location that was going to be attacked. That doesn't kind of all stack up to me, because you would have thought that everybody would have been evacuated from that location, but yet there clearly are people who have been killed. And in fact, the Qataris are quick to say that human remains have been found. They haven't exactly confirmed the identity of the remains that have been found, but there is certainly an increasing wave of whisper, of rumor coming out of the Israeli establishment that the attack did not succeed in taking out those leaders who were targeted. And so the question is, what now, and whether that was a good idea at all, given the risk of failure. And if indeed they did fail, I mean, if the attack was successful, one would say, yes, definitely worthwhile. You know, with 2020 hindsight, we can see it was worthwhile. But we also understand that there was a lot of opposition to this attack.
And I'm going to ask you, the US, we know, informed Qatar, maybe, you know, do we know if, do we know what really, well, besides that, if it was successful, I think there's certainly from an Israel perspective, there's no doubt that it was a brilliant thing to have done, given that these are the people that planned and motivated October 7th and claim they will do it again. That's clear. If not, well, maybe the living with the torment of knowing that Israel can reach them at any time, living, you know, looking over their shoulders, and without the 72 virgins, if that's a thing, maybe makes life a little bit unpleasant. Maybe it's more torment.
Are clear messages that can be sent here. First of all, there was clearly opposition within the Israeli security establishment about carrying out this attack, because there was fear that if the attack was successful or carried out and unsuccessful, it might have a direct impact on the safety of our hostages in Gaza, that that may well be a reason for our hostages to be harmed further, to be treated worse, to be potentially killed in retaliation against such an attack. And there was certainly a lot of opposition within Israel before the attack actually took place, for fear that it may well risk the lives even more of our hostages in Gaza. And I think we can all understand that reasoning. And there are people who felt that this was the way to really break open the logjam of the negotiations, because aside from the leaders who were targeted being held responsible for October the 7th, they are also being held responsible for holding up any hostage release deal. There is a view which says that they are the ones who are delaying things. They are the ones who are playing games. They are the ones who are preventing from any hostage release deal and from us ending this war finally. They are the ones who sit quite comfortably in their five-star hotel in Doha, and they don't have to bear the consequences of the of what's going on in Gaza, and therefore they can afford to play these games and to play politics rather than reality on the ground. And this, I think, was an attempt to try to break open all of that and to remove that obstacle. Now that we think there is a potential that it didn't succeed, what does that mean? So I think you're right in saying that it sends an even greater message that nobody is safe anywhere in the world, not even in Qatar, which was considered to be well off limits in terms of Israel attacking because of the U.S. Relationship with Qatar and because of Qatar's role in mediating and because of many, many other factors, including the fact that Israel had never previously attacked any emirate of the United Arab Emirates. This was the very first time that that had ever taken place. So there were many, many reasons why this wouldn't be a good idea. But the point is now that the message is clear that if you don't sleep with your helmets on and if you don't shower with your helmets on, no matter where you are in the world, no matter where you may be hiding, whether it's a bunker in central Beirut, whether it's sleeping in a hotel in Tehran, whether it's a five-star hotel in Doha, nobody is safe anywhere around the world. And I think that that message is probably an important one to be able to send. What impact it will have, assuming that these leaders were not killed, is unclear at the moment, and how it may affect hostage release negotiations moving forward remains unclear. But there's no doubt that it's changed the dynamic, and I think a change to the dynamic was required. The big question is whether it will change it positively and help our cause or not, and I guess we will have to just wait and see how that pans out.
Absolutely right. And I'm sure by the next time we speak to you on Monday, we will have a little bit more information about the story. Anthony Reich, thank you. Wonderful to have you back this week for the Israel Report. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll chat to you on Monday morning at 6:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.